Welcome to the Amherst Wesleyan Church Sermon Podcast.
You got your Bibles here this morning. We are turning to the book of Ezekiel. The book of Ezekiel, it is a prophet. He is a prophet in the Old Testament. He's known as one of the major prophets, not because he is more important than some of the other prophets, but simply because he wrote a lot. And so we have major prophets and minor prophets, and they're kind of categorized simply because of the length of their individual books. And so Ezekiel is one of the major prophets, and we have spent 2 months, 1 month a while ago, and then this recent month, digging into the entire book of Ezekiel, trying to work through the whole book. And so today we are wrapping up our study on the book of Ezekiel. And we get to the last few chapters, chapters about 45 to 48, and we get looking at that, and we're going to look at two or three major passages from this book as we kind of figure out what Ezekiel is getting at and what it is that we need to take from that today. How many of you had trouble getting up and getting to church this morning? Be honest with me. How many of you had trouble just getting up this morning? How many of you here are still not fully awake? Have you ever had one of those days where you wake up and you're like, I'm pretty sure I'm still asleep, but I'm going to keep moving? And you get up and you get your coffee and you get your breakfast and you have those things there, and then you get to work and you're still like, I'm pretty sure I'm still sleeping. Anybody else have those? I know, like, even before I had kids, I had those moments, but now after having kids, it's just more frequent. And there's like a fog or something in your brain, isn't there? When you're not fully awake, you know you're alive, you know you're not in bed, and you're angry about that. But mentally, something's just not clicking. It's like there's this cloudy headache thing going on. And as you're trying to process information, it's just not processing right. People say something to you, you read an email, somebody asks you a question, and you're like, the English word that I should be saying now, I know to be very simple, but I don't know what it is. Things just aren't processing properly. And when we are in that state of awake but not fully awake, it is very difficult to navigate life and to figure out what you should be doing and how you're supposed to be doing it. You know you're there. You know an idea of the direction you're supposed to be going. But actually following through is very, very difficult. In Ezekiel, he is this prophet to the Israelite people during the time of exile. And that's when the Israelites had disobeyed God over and over and over again. And in order to cleanse them, in order to deal with them and teach them where they needed to go, he allowed another nation to come in, conquer them, and then take the majority of the people out of their land and put them in another land. And so they had spent many, many years disobeying God. They were sent into a foreign nation. And they were in exile for 70 years. Some of you here are right around that 70-year mark. You're the only ones that really have a concept of what 70 years is like. When you're younger than that, you don't really get it. When I was young, I thought 40 was ancient. I'm getting awful close. And it doesn't seem ancient anymore. And when I'm 50, I'm going to think, oh man, 80's a long way off. Like, the concept of time is very difficult to wrap your head around. But they were there for 70 years, which means some of you know exactly. Some of you may be right at that age where you have never seen home, and only now you're going to go back to your family home. Others of you have a concept, and it's getting close. But they were there a long time. Maybe for many of them, their entire lives. But God had promised to bring them home, to give them a new day, and to change how life was. And they were getting very close to that moment. They were about to go home. And so Ezekiel has spent this entire book, these years, prophesying, speaking to the people of Israel, trying to show them what they need to do, and they're starting to wake up. They're starting to see what it is that they did that got them into the situation and what they need to be doing now that they are past that and they're going to be going home. And they're starting to realize that certain behaviors were causing problems. And they're starting to see how their sin continued to send them down this downward spiral. They're beginning to see how they had betrayed God and they had betrayed their neighbors. And for you and me, you may be able to relate to that state of waking up or that, oh, we're right near this new day thing, and you have started to see something happen, and you've started to hear God speak to you, and maybe it was over the past few weeks, maybe it was this morning, I don't know, but you have started to wake up in your own life, and you have started to realize that certain behaviors in your life have been causing problems. Maybe you just realized that your marriage is in trouble. And you're starting to see what the cause of it has been. Maybe you just realized that there is a God. You don't know what to do with that. You don't know how to manage that or how to figure that out. But you're starting to see that there is a God, and you know you've got to figure that out. Maybe your eyes have just been opened enough that you can see that stuff isn't making you happy, or that your job is sucking the life out of you, or that you really are not as secure financially as you hoped you were going to be, or that just going along with what everybody else is doing is actually backfiring and causing pain and problems in your life. And so you're starting to see all these things, and you're starting to get glimpses, and it's like you're just waking up, and you can see that they're there, but you don't know exactly what to say. You don't know exactly what to do. Well, when we get into the end of Ezekiel, we see that God has this incredible message for the people of Israel. He spends the last few chapters of this book talking about what is going to be happening next. And he talks about the sanctuary, the original place where the people would worship God when he brought them out of Egypt and they were wandering in the desert. He said, build a sanctuary, build a tabernacle, and build that place to be a perfect place for us to gather and meet with God. Me. And he talks about the temple, and he talks about the priest, and he talks about procedures. He says, one day you're going to build the proper temple. And in chapter 45, verses 8 to 10, it says this: this land will be his possession in Israel. And my princes will no longer oppress my people, but will allow the people of Israel to possess the land according to their tribes. This is what the sovereign Lord says: you have gone far enough, princes of Israel. Give up your violence and oppression and do what is just and right. Stop dispossessing my people, declares the Lord God. You are to use accurate scales, an accurate ephah, and an accurate bath, or accurate measurements. And then if you keep reading in those passages, God then progresses on to talk about the standards of Israelite worship, about how they're supposed to do sacrifices, how they're supposed to do cleansing, how they're supposed to work in this new sanctuary and temple that he is going to build, that he is going to bring them into. And he goes through all of those details, and then in chapter 47, verses 1 to 12, it says this: "The man brought me back to the entrance of the temple, and I saw water coming out from under the threshold of the temple toward the east, for the temple faced east, and the water was coming down from under the south side of the temple, south of the altar. He then brought me out through the north gate and led me around the outside of the outer gate facing east, and the water was trickling from the south side. And as the man went eastward with a measuring line in his hand, he measured off 1,000 cubits and then led me through water that was ankle deep. He measured off another 1,000 cubits and led me through water that was knee deep. And he measured off another 1,000 and led me through the water that was waist deep. He measured off another 1,000, but now it was a river that I could not cross because the water had risen and was deep enough to swim in, a river that no one could cross. He asked me, 'Son of man, what do you see?' Then he led me back to the bank of the river. And when I arrived there, I saw a great number of trees on each side of the river. And he said to me, 'This water flows toward the eastern region and goes down into the Arabah, where it enters the Dead Sea.'" Now let's just pause there for a second. I'm sure many of you have heard of the Dead Sea, yes? The thing about the Dead Sea is not that you go in it and you die. It's called the Dead Sea because salt water will flow into it, and then it just stays there. And the water evaporates, and the salt stays. And so it is this exceptionally salty body of water, so salty that the buoyancy, you can float quite high in it, just naturally because of the salt content in the water. But also because of that, nothing really grows around it because it's way too salty. And so they call it the Dead Sea. And so it enters the Dead Sea. This water is entering the Dead Sea. And when it empties into the sea, the salty water there becomes fresh. Swarms of living creatures will live wherever the river flows. And there will be large numbers of fish because the water flows there and makes the salt water fresh. So where the river flows, everything will live. Fishermen will stand along the shore, and there will be places for spreading nets, and the fish will be of many kinds. But the swamps and the marshes will not become fresh. They will be left for salt. Fruit trees of all kinds will grow on both banks of the river. Their leaves will not wither, nor will the fruit fail. Every month they will bear fruit because the water from the sanctuary flows to them. Their fruit will serve for food, and their leaves for healing." Ezekiel then spends some time talking about the land of Israel and how it's supposed to be evenly, fairly distributed. And when we get to the end of this book, in chapter 48, verse 35, the very last verse in the book of Ezekiel, He's talking about the city of Jerusalem, the new city, the new home for Israel. He says the distance all around it will be 18,000 cubits. And the name of the city from that time on will be "The Lord is there." What we have here in the in these chapters is we see this connection between worship and restoration. That when they remember the temple, when they remember the sanctuary, it makes them change. It points them in the proper direction. It shows them how they're supposed to be living, and that's supposed to affect how the princes live, and that they're supposed to be fair, and they're supposed to be good, and they're not supposed to be hoarding it to themselves. We find that as we focus on the temple, that life flows from the temple. Flows like a river, and not only does it just give life, but it actually takes the thing called the Dead Sea and makes it a sea of life. And then from if you follow that and you are filled with that life, you see that the land all of a sudden gets shared. And the name of the land changes. And the defining characteristic of the land, of the city, of the people is that God is there. Now, there are tons of things that we could talk about and that we could dig into from all of these passages. But this is what I want us to get from these chapters here this morning. What I see in these chapters is that proper worship clarifies life. Proper worship clarifies life. It's because of the proper worship of Israel and looking at the perfected design of the tabernacle, of the sanctuary that God made that is supposed to correct where, how the people are living. It's a proper worship in the temple that life flows from. It's a proper living and the proper giving of sacrifices to God that allows everybody to live in harmony and to live in the presence of God. That proper worship always precedes the change of life. It always precedes the presence and fullness of God's presence. It's like getting that second cup of coffee. It's walking around and you don't have your glasses on or your contacts in, and you finally put your contacts in, you put your glasses on, and you can see. It's getting up and having that hot shower that you have wanted for 2 weeks, but every time you go to the bathroom to have a shower, your kids are banging out on the door, and you're just like, ugh. But you finally get the shower. And all of a sudden, you're not in the fog, you're awake. These things bring clarity to our lives. And likewise, proper worship, worshiping God the way He wants us to worship, will clarify and bring clarity to our lives. What do I mean by that? Instead of just having a vague idea that our marriage is in trouble or that there is a God or that there's something that is causing pain and that our behavior is backfiring and causing problems in our life, that certain relationships in our lives are doing all kinds of damage. Instead of just having the idea that those problems are there, which many of us can see but don't know what to do with, worship actually brings up and shows you what it is that needs to change. The worship is what brings us to the place where we are aware of God's presence enough and aware of what He's saying enough that we actually know, oh, it's because this is going on in my marriage, or it's because of this behavior, or it's because of this relationship that I have been investing in too much, or it's because I've been putting too much time into this thing, or I've been focused on a job that will provide me the right money, or it's because I've been spending money in order to get happy rather than spending money to make a difference in our world, or whatever it is, and we see the problems, and all of a sudden we know what it is that we should be doing next. We need to change how we spend our money. We need to change how we talk to our families. We need to change where we're putting our time and our effort. We need to change whatever. And not only that, but it also gives us this power, this life that flows from God and flows from His presence that enables that change, that makes that change, that starts to take over who we are. But you don't get that clarity from the voice of God. You don't get to be able to pick up this book and really hear God speak to you until you start to learn how to worship Him. Proper worship clarifies life. Now, worship is not simply getting together on Sunday morning and singing some songs. Worship is about daily, moment by moment, declaring to God what He is worth to you. Being here together and singing the songs and meaning the songs, which is the words and the music, and meaning that and using that to pour your heart and your will, your desire out to God is part of worship. But it's also when you go home and you hear Him whisper to you and say, you need to go say sorry for that dumb thing you did. Even though it was mainly their fault, you know you played a part and you need to go say sorry. You don't need to buy that thing on Amazon right now. You don't. You should probably just take it out of your wish list too. It's about having conversations with God and saying, what is it that you want me to be doing with my time? How do you want me to budget my finances? Maybe it's a question about tithing. And God wants to be God of your money. Maybe He wants to be God of your marriage, God of your kids, God of your job. Part of worship is surrendering all of those things to Him. And that starts with the will. That starts with a decision that we make. An intentional choice that says, God, these are your things. I will do whatever it is that you want me to do with this, even if it's getting rid of them. The second part of worship is actually following through and depending on God. And so I don't know what it is in your life that God has been waking you up to, but if you want to know what it is that needs to happen next, if you want to be able to see clearly, if you want to be able to know the next steps, if you want to have life in those situations in your life, then your next step is to worship properly. which is both here, pouring your heart out to God, but also at home when you're seeking Him, surrendering things to Him, your money, your family, your spouse, your job, your hobbies, the shows that you watch, the things you listen to, what it is you're doing with your spare time, how it is that all the measurements that you use on figuring out what is risky and not risky, and whether or not you're going to go on a mission trip or you're going to serve in ministry or you're not going to, whatever that is, it is surrendering all that to Him, and then it's taking a step of faith and being obedient in those things. When you start to follow Him in those practical ways, it's like putting glasses on. Proper worship clarifies life. That's what we see here at the end of Ezekiel, at the end of the exile. As they're waking up, he says, remember the life that you were made for comes from your worship of the one true God.
Thanks for listening and being part of our church and joining us in this journey to become down-to-earth people following Jesus in down-to-earth ways.